The ideal clay court athlete, Stefanos Tsitsipas wins Monte Carlo, and Rafa's return to the main tour. That and more on this episode of Beer Garden Tennis. Let's crack on. Welcome back, everyone, to Beer Garden Tennis. I'm here with the Kulf man. How you going, Kulf?
Yeah, good, Josh. Good to be back. Episode 2, looking forward to it.
I think we're in the top 50% of podcasts now that have actually done an episode 2. I don't want to get too ahead of ourselves, though. We still have to record the thing, but we're on it.
We'll just keep chipping away. We'll just keep chipping away and see where it ends up.
So in the last episode, episode 1, we talked quite broadly, I would say, having listened back, about where people are at form-wise and maybe where some of the best players in the world on the ATP like to play, their favourite surfaces. So today I wanted to knuckle down on the clay because that's where we are in April 2024. We're in the start of the clay season. So I did have a question come through just in the last 24 hours regarding that first pod. A friend of mine asked, what types of athletes do suit different surfaces better than others, because we referenced that as though that's common knowledge in the first pod, that different kinds of athletes maybe work better on different surfaces. You, as the accomplished tennis player, can you just give us a quick 411 on why people's games maybe suit a surface and not another surface?
Yeah, great question. Obviously, on the ATP Tour, you've got different athletic profiles right across the board. You know, we mentioned guys like Alexander Zverev, 6'6". We did mention in episode 1 that his movement so impressive on the clay, which is probably a little bit of a surprise considering his height. You don't normally get those guys that are that tall, outstanding movers on the clay. They like that the hard court surface, for example. So in terms of referencing clay court season, which is just getting underway now, you're probably looking at the guys that more of the smaller guys in that typical 5'10" to 6'3", they seem to be the guys that more compact, more low center of gravity, that get around the clay and change direction a lot better. In terms of, he's probably not doing so well now, but a guy like a Diego Schwartzman, for example, former top 10, I believe, probably just inside the top 10, had great results on clay when really pushed Rafa at the French Open there a few years ago. He's probably on the smaller side. He's probably that 5'9", maybe 5'10". But a guy like Alcaraz is perfect. Mm. We know he's the total package in terms of his, his athleticism and his entire game, net play, baseline play, movement wise. But 6'1", really strong legs. Low center of gravity. He really fits the profile. And Nadal's the same kind of build.
Yeah.
About 6'1", maybe 6'2".
It's been described by my dad as rugby players playing tennis.
Mm. Yeah. And for the fans out there, if you just get a chance during the clay court season, pay more attention to if you get a chance to watch on television or even highlights, for example, just pay attention to more the physical build of the players. Look from the hips down, those quads, really strong in the legs. And we're talking most of the guys that are full-time on the professional tour, especially those guys top 50 that have the success week in, week out. They're on their legs all the time. Tennis is played from the legs up. We say that a lot in the coaching space to a lot of youngsters out there that are developing. But very rarely do you see those guys, unless you're an outlier like you're Zverev, who's been a number one junior in the world, who was touted to be a possible future Grand Slam champion. No surprise that he's able to do what he does. He's, for lack of a better term, a bit of a freak in that regard, where clay's probably he's had the best results probably on the clay, some Masters 1000 success, semis of the French Open. But really looking at the smaller guys, in that six foot one mold, where just explodes you through the hips, through the legs, and are able to track balls down like you wouldn't believe, and play defense. Novak Djokovic, he's probably a little bit more leaner, but he's not extremely tall, 6'2", 6'3". Great flexibility where you can play that defense and play a lot of balls defensively at full stretch out there, using those levers. And, the ball's not always going to be in the hitting zone for these guys. A lot of the time on clay court, you, you're really scrambling and you're hitting balls out of position. So guys are able to do that at a world class level. You find that they get the results at the biggest events.
And I think on the clay, maybe more than any other surface, sometimes the game lengths maybe aren't out to these classic Wimbledon Australian Open finals where they're 5 or 6 hours, but the average game time does stretch. And it's about those players that don't just have the physique to get to all these balls, but the fact that they don't always get to play the shot that they would like to play when they get there. There's a frustration on clay, particularly against people with the, you know, lots and lots of topspin. People like Nadal, the king of just keeping it super low and making people hit off their feet half the time. It's the mental side of, oh, even if I track all these balls down in this long game, I'm going to have to hit a lot of shots that I would rather hit differently. And that's something I've seen even bother some of the most mentally strong players like Medvedev. You can just see the frustration in classic clay matches he's played where he's just sick of hitting it in these awkward spots.
Absolutely. And the obvious thing that we need to pay attention to as well is the sliding factor.
Yeah.
Sliding. Medvedev, you know, especially the last two seasons, he's openly spoken about a great clay court seasons here. You know what I mean? Like, I don't even want to show up. You know what I mean? Mm. He, you know, a guy who's been solidified in the top three in the world over the past few seasons, just dreading the fact that he's got to go and play on this stuff called clay. And the results showed he couldn't stand up. He was falling all over himself. He was always out of position and seemed to be, we know he loves to play deep in the court. Guys were drop shotting him even more as they do when he's on a hard court. And he just didn't have the traction to move and track down balls and be balanced and in position like he can on a hard court. We know on a hard court, absolute, you know, beast in terms of getting around the court, covers more ground than anybody else, loves to start back deep in the court on return and then work his way in. But he just creates all kinds of problems for guys on a hard court. You know, we haven't seen someone do that like he does, probably rarely ever. A guy 6'6" that can move like he can on a hard court. And then he's just failed to, you know, transition onto the clay court. Now he's been able to do it a little bit better over the last 12 months and his results have showed in that. Now he's able to get, win a couple of main draw matches perhaps, get into a quarterfinal and until he runs into an elite clay quarter. But previously, Josh, he was losing first round. I think he went on a streak there where he couldn't even get out of the first round at, whether it was Masters level or 250 level on the clay. And, you know, he was open about it. That's what we love about Medvedev. He speaks his mind and he gives good press conferences. So
they're the best. He's super funny and very, very intelligent person. I guess the other thing, just before we move on with the clay, the routine for players can't be quite as smooth. There's dust coming up off the court if it's windy. That Roland Garros court particularly tends to have some strange gustiness that maybe is a little bit more unsettling than the other major, like, show courts or the big courts are. And I know in the past that's upset, like Novak. He's a little bit susceptible to when the conditions aren't right, that it can get in his head a little bit. But, you know, just having dust in your eyes if you wear contacts, for example, or having to clean your shoes all the time. I mean, the guys that have done it more, obviously, growing up are used to it. But there's just those extra little fatiguing processes that players have to go through that's not just as smooth as I go wipe some sweat off and then I'm ready for the next point.
Yeah, different elements as well. You failed to mention there the classic of when they fall over on the clay as well.
Oh, yes.
You know, and they're doing commando rolls through the clay courts and then they get up and they look like they need to take a quick shower.
Yeah.
You know, so, you know, there's that scenario as well, which is an absolute nightmare. I just said it gets in your socks, it gets in your shoes, and if you're not accustomed to that or you know, you don't and enjoy that side of it, you're in for a long journey once the clay court season comes around. Now, there's the aspect of, you know, in terms of conditions, as you said, windy days can create all kinds of havoc out there for players. And then also you've got, you know, the temperature out there. Nadal likes to play. He always liked to play in Paris at the French Open, you know, on those hot days where it was high 27, 28 degrees or early, you know, low 30s, for example. And, you know, the reason why I love that is because his heavy topspin, he could get the ball up higher into the backhand corner of his opponent, of the right-hander, which was the pattern of play, which, gave Federer fits for years and years and years, and Nadal, no matter what was going on in terms of, you know, form guide or anything like that at all, as soon as he played Federer, you knew that was the pattern, and I'm going to do that for 3-4 hours and I'm eventually going to win this match because I'm going to break you down. Yeah. Remember Leighton Hewitt speaking there years ago saying that he played Nadal there at the French Open, you know, on a hot day there on the center court, and he said it was almost impossible. You know, Leighton had the two-hand backhand, as we know, and he said the ball was just jumping up like nonstop, and we know Leighton was one of the best movers out there and one of the best defenders that the game's ever seen. And he said he just felt like it was just constantly coming at you high, over your head, shoulder, level and above, over and over and over again. And he said eventually you just wear down because he just continues to just play that, pummel you and pummel you and pummel you. And guys like Nadal, as we know, relentless and disciplined. And, you know, that's why his record is the greatest record that's ever been seen on a clay court. He grew up on it. You know, he's disciplined like, you know, no other player we've really seen. And that's the way you have to be, you know, on the clay. And some great matches over the European summer, that's for sure. But it's interesting, you know, the guys that, you know, that have definitely prefer the hard courts, seeing them transition onto the clay and not getting half the results that they're used to week in, week out during the hard court season.
Yeah, exactly. And one player that we did speak about, but it actually didn't make the episode. It made the cutting room floor because listening back, we're probably pretty overly harsh on the guy. It was Tsitsipas. So since we last spoke, he's gone on to win Monte Carlo and in quite convincing fashion, as it turns out. So for those who didn't keep up, semi-final Sinner in three, that was pretty convincing. 6-4 Steph and then 6-3 Sinner. So Sinner wasn't rolling over by any means. He was putting up a fight. And then Steph got across the line 6-4 in the third set. And then pretty much just demolished Casper Ruud. Like Ruud had really nothing to offer, particularly in that first set. He was just so overpowered. And we were questioning off air, I guess, for the lack of a better term, Kulfman, whether Tsitsipas was at the level that he needs to be or even the level that he's captured in the past to be competitive now that the slightly younger generation is so strong. And within a week, he's proven that at least on clay, he's still one of the guys.
Spot on, Josh. And, you know, countless conversations with, you know, with guys out there in terms of the Tsitsipas, where's he at? And just when you think that, you know, he's probably not playing well enough to find that form where, you know, that top three, top four form, that, you know, the elite to the elite level on the ATP Tour, he puts in a week like he just has, where he wins Monte Carlo for the third time. And the discussion was, after that week, Josh, we spoke about it and we're like, look, clay's definitely his best surface. I don't think there's any question about that. Now, we know that he has had, you know, great success on a hard court. But it just seems that when he gets on the clay, regardless of, you know, how his form is, he seems to find his comfort zone. You know, winning for the third time there in Monte Carlo. He's backing it up again this week with some good results. So just when you think that, you know, you can sort of, you know, move his piece of the puzzle to the side and out of that, you know, that threat for a Grand Slam title, so to speak, he puts his name back in there. Yeah. And it's frustrating because it's like, make your mind up, you know, Tsitsipas. You know, do you want to be involved in the Sinner discussion, in the Alcaraz discussion, you know, in there with Novak, or don't you want to be? So it's an interesting one. You know, he's backing it up again this week. French Open will be the big one for mine. You know, if he can get back to where he was at there a few seasons ago, where he led Novak 2-0, let that one slip. I don't think he's been the same player since, probably because the first two sets, I should say, that final, amazing level of tennis, and really made me a believer that, like, gee whiz, like, that's an incredible level to win the first two sets there. And we know Novak was able to come back once again, and you know, I really felt that he may not get back there, Tsitsipas, and have that same opportunity to win one. But you know what? You know, he's put his name right back in there again, you know, a few weeks out from Roland Garros, and I'm really curious to see if he can back it up and make a semi and make a final, and, you know, maybe win it. You know, who knows? He's on fire right now.
I always know with Tsitsipas, where he's at. And I remember he did this in the World Tour Finals. He can get this blank expression over his, not so much just his face, but his whole manner, that he's completely unaffected by what's happening in the moment. And he can also be hyper-emotional and distracted and look into the box too much and talking and, you know, getting, approaching on coaching violations, all these things in the past that he kind of existed in two minds, and it kind of separated whether he was elite, elite, or looking like he wasn't really even competitive sometimes. You didn't know who you were going to get. The two matches that I watched in full this week, the Sinner and Casper Ruud, he had that slight detachment from his errors that the truly elite players have. That even if it's a massively frustrating moment or you're on top in the point and you end up losing it, he was letting out a little bit of emotion, but it generally seemed pretty positive, but he kept his focus and he looked confident. Like, there wasn't any period in either of those two matches where I was looking at, particularly against Ruud, where I was looking at a guy that looked like he was going to lose. And sometimes when players are completely detached, you're like, do you realize what's going on here?
Yeah.
Like, you're detached completely from the moment. This was more like a positive sort of emotional state, because we know that he has the physical tools and the touch to be competitive against anyone. It just was really positive to see him look as though he's not counting himself out of winning before it's happened.
One thing a couple of seasons ago that, you know, I definitely noticed with Tsitsipas was that was a given, you know, week in, week out in all his matches, whether he was winning or he was losing, was that positivity. With his body language.
Yeah, it's like he's up between serves.
Yeah, just real confidence in himself and, you know, the way he handled himself out there on court and his persona. And then, you know, as we've spoken about before, you know, he's gotten away from that a little bit and hence the, you know, his performance hasn't been as consistent, where he gets a little bit internal and, as you said, starts screaming at the player's box or, you know, letting outside elements really get in. You know, and you really find that when he's in that mode that from a couple of seasons ago, where, you know, it's just nothing but positivity coming, you know, chest out, head up, in between points, and, you know, going through his between point routine. You know, when he's in that mode and that frame of mind, he's really locked in mentally, and as you said, not paying attention to little things that can, you know, unravel a player, so to speak. And, you know, he's not paying attention to the errors, understanding that, hey, I want to get around and hit as many forehands as I can. You know, he's one of those guys that, you know, the total package when it's on display, he's one where you go, I'll tell you what, he's a real game changer.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's just lacking that result in a big, I'm talking about the biggest matches, you know, a slam final, you know. He's had a crack at Novak a couple of times and failed like many have before.
Yeah.
But, you know.
And when I said before, Kaufman, he had a blank expression, maybe that's the wrong term. It's just when he isn't affected by his own errors. He has a game style that's going to produce more errors than Novak and more than Medvedev, more than these guys that have very solid backhands, like low error backhands. His game is more a game that's exciting to watch. It's big hitting. It's the one-handed backhand. That's a beautiful thing when it's on, but it is going to create more errors when it's not.
Yeah.
And for a couple of years there, he was really on himself. Like, why can't I hit all these targets like these guys? And he would get in his own head.
Yep. And he's free-flowing. And I really feel that he's great for the sport.
Yeah.
You know, no question about that. You know, he can be a little bit of a, especially lately, a little bit of a lightning rod for attention with, you know, some of the off-court stuff that's going on. He's been criticized previously for paying attention to too much off-court stuff with your social media and your YouTube channel, or, you know, been talk of like whoever he's dating, blah, blah, blah. You know, find a different coach. You know, so he's always being, you know, talked about, not always in a positive light. But I think that just goes to show that the public and I guess the media, they expect more of him because of his talent, you know. And we did talk about previously when he first came on tour, you know, he wasn't really considered as you know, as one of the best 19-year-olds in the world at the time. You know, he may have been like top 4 or 5 for his age at that time, but he quickly ascended. You know, by the time he was 20 years of age, he was the best 20-year-old in the world.
Yeah,
he was quickly into the top 15 in the world. With some, you know, he had a red hot summer there over in the States in Indian Wells, Miami. He made the final in Indian Wells. And before he knew it, he was knocking on the door of the top 10 because he worked on the forehand. He worked on the, you know, on the serve. You know, so he's got the work ethic, but he just lacks that marquee, massive win where the world's watching.
Yeah, exactly. So this isn't the Stefanos Tsitsipas podcast, so we will move on, guys. So let's talk about what's been going on this week on the dirt. So is there anything that's got you excited about this week? Is there anything you're seeing from certain players form-wise or...?
Well, I think the exciting thing is, and it's the obvious one for all the tennis lovers out there, Nadal, you know, coming back to Barcelona to play, you know, was supposed to start, obviously, last week, couldn't do that. So good to see him actually on court, win a main draw match, and then went down to Dimonar pretty comfortably, I think it was, you know, looking at the scoreline and seeing some of that match there. But, you know, overall, he's optimistic. He says, look, let's try for next week now. Let's get a little bit more court time. And ultimately, he's looking to be at his best. What that means right now for Nadal, you know, we don't know. But just be at his best physically and mentally that he can be, considering, his injury woes for the French Open, which is, smart from him. He doesn't want to come out and play, you know, four or five tough matches week one. He's already had an experience in Australia, which wasn't great, where... Yeah, he won a couple of main draw matches, and then, you know, by match three, obviously, you know, his body let him down. So he'd be aware of that. Clay court tennis, a bit of a softer surface than the hard court, so that certainly helps his cause. But that's the most exciting thing, I think, in the world of tennis was the great man was back on court, and let's hope he can continue and win some main draw matches, you know, next week and as well as at the French Open. That's the standout for me.